you are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
You are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Treasury Cast, the show that celebrates the greatest comics format of all time, the Treasury Edition, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and joining us this month to talk about Marvel Treasury Edition number 9, Giant Superhero Team-Up, is our pal, Brett Young. Hi, Brett.
Hello, Florida man. How are we?
America! you truly do have the voice of an angel, Brett.
Thank you.
Did you have this book at any point, or when we decided to do this, was this your first time reading it?
Yeah, no. This is my first time reading it. It was my first time reading any of those stories, actually. I've never read any of these before, so this was pretty cool.
So, okay, was there something about, once you read it, mm-hmm. was there something that you noticed about the stories contained versus, say, the title of the book?
Well, yeah, I would say Team Up is a bit misleading. It should be like, I don't know why they just didn't write Fight over the front of it or something like that. But I mean, this, and I don't know if you want to get it in the cover already and everything, but if you saw this on the shelf, if you're a kid and you see this in a department store or in a comic store or wherever, I mean, you're just like, wow, this is all you want.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. You can't turn it down. It's no. Hulk versus Thor, Submariner yeah. versus Thing, Silver Surfer versus Spider-Man, and Daredevil mm-hmm. versus Captain America, drawn by John Romita. I mean, it's just like, yep. yeah, how no kid with $1.50 in his pocket is going to be able to turn this down. But yeah, why not just call it Giant Superhero Battles? There's not a team-up yeah. to be found in this entire book.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not even like they team up later. It's not like they fight and then team up, you know, like, yeah. like a lot of those Marvel things. It's no, they fight and then they're gone.
Yeah, that's it. And you can see, like, on the inside cover, you know, it's got all the heroes just sort of standing there. Well, that's yeah. them teaming up. It's just yeah. standing there looking like the color guard at Arlington National Cemetery. Yeah. And it's like, that's boring. Nobody wants to see that. You want to see what's on the cover, which is them beating the crap out of each other.
Exactly. Plus, the thing is smoking, so that's nice. But but it's funny. The inside, I almost feel like they set it up to be like, hey, it's okay. We're all friends. You know, just a misunderstanding. You know, everything's cool. So
there will be multiple misunderstandings throughout this book. And in yes. fact, much like I've done for the last couple of episodes of Treasury Cast, mm-hmm. I'm not bothering writing synopses anymore because I'm just tired of writing synopses. And there's really no point in writing any of these this is the feature, not a bug of this book, is that it all depends on how much the writers, in this case, it's just two writers, Stan Lee and Roy Thomas, how they could contrive a reason to get these characters fighting and then fighting right. for say 20 pages. Right. That's it. You know, there's really not even a point of getting into the plot details of these things. So there's four stories. The first one is called In the Rage of Battle from Submariner number 8. It is by the aforementioned Roy Thomas and art by John Buscema and Dan Adkins. Now, first off, John Buscema, we're in good hands. Dan yeah. Adkins, great anchor. But man, the splash page, and of course, you'll be able to see some of these images yeah. on our gallery post. The splash page to this thing where you've got somebody looking at a newspaper and mm-hmm. the cover, the you know, the well, of course, the Daily Bugle, of course. And the headline is, you know, the title of our story with a photo of Thing and Namor beating each other up. And it's done like an old newspaper. So it's in black and white, like mm-hmm. such a grabber of an image. I mean, just such yeah. a beautiful splash page.
Yeah, and that's and I'm gonna be waxing Buscema's car a lot in this episode. But
how can you not?
That is a that is just a gorgeous splash page, because I mean, look what he did with basically a newspaper in the trash can. I mean, and just made this fantastic, and you sort of have the mystery of whoever's writing the journal in the background and everything too. It's fantastic. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. The effect of it being in black, I mean, it has to be in black and white because it's the newspaper, but just
Yeah.
the effect is really cool because it's not something you typically see. And it's sort of funny, of course, Brett. The last time we podcasted together was Marvel, the Mountain Comics
Yes.
episode with Marvel 2-in-1 featuring
Yep.
the Thing and Namor. So here we are back with the Thing and Namor. And so the whole thing is told in flashback. As you mentioned, somebody
Right.
is, some mysterious person is writing a journal and they explain what's going on. Namor is trying to get some help. For Dora, Dorma, I always say her name wrong, his one of his loves, and of course, you know, everyone on, you know, back puny earthlings and puny humans and things
Yeah.
like that. I say this every single time it comes up with John Buscema, and I'm sure anyone who's listened to my podcast for more than a couple of years is tired of me saying it, but I still can't get over it. We all know that John Buscema did not like drawing superheroes. And he was forced to because that's where the work was. Like, I think if he had had his druthers, he would have just done Conan and Tarzan all day. And yet, Brett, you're a professional artist. I was a professional artist. Sometimes it's hard when your heart's not in it. It's so, you know, you have to really kind of summon the energy to deliver the best of your best possible work when you're not thrilled with this job. And the Herculean labor of the pages that Buscema had to crank out featuring stuff he did not care about is unreal because these pages, these layouts are fantastic.
Gorgeous. It's gorgeous. He the storytelling, the quote unquote camera angles that he uses are fantastic. But one of my favorite is actually, I guess it's, I think it's page three of the story where they have the long the tall panel where it's sort of the worm's eye view of you looking almost like you're the body on the ground. And looking up like through like underneath the cop's arm, and you see all the bystanders looking at the body. It's fantastic. I mean, it takes a sort of a rudimentary, what would normally be a rudimentary panel, and just makes it fan it just makes it so interesting. It's great. It's
I
great.
said he really, really delivers it. There's features, some cameo. He fights the Human Torch for a minute. There's a cameo from Giant Man and the Vision. There's this great moment of the Thing talking to this really officious guy. They're kind of like a, you know, yes, Mr. Graham, is that kind of character. And then, you know, the Thing is sent after he's got to get this doohickey that Namor's got, and of course, trying to talk any sense into Namor is a complete waste of time, and it just becomes a complete battle. And then there is this amazing page. It's page 16 of the Treasury, where Thing and Namor are falling through a building, and it's a cutaway. All of a sudden, we're in a Wes Anderson movie where we are seeing all three floors of the building like there's no wall to it, and we're just seeing them fall through it. And it's such a startling way of telling the sequence.
Oh, Wes Anderson. There should be somebody with a bicycle riding by him. No, that's a fantastic image. It's so good, and just sort of, demonstrates the power of these two guys just smashing through, and the fact that nobody died is just, is pretty fortunate. But the thing I noticed about this too is just throughout the whole thing. Well, one thing, the Thing for some reason is riding an elliptical through the streets of New York. But the Buscema drew this. It's very claustrophobic. It's very cramped. And it's sort of, if you notice, like for instance, like the page where they're getting into the taxi cab, that whole page you can tell it's just they're in an alley, then they're kind of cramped, they're kind of like stuffed into the back of this taxi cab. And most of the fight, I mean, these aren't high flyers, these aren't, well, I guess Namor is to an extent, but they're brawlers. And this is not like an elegant fight where you're firing laser bolts or anything at each other. These guys are just punching the crap out of each other, and you see that it's just down and dirty, and it's just like a barroom brawl, and Buscema just does that so perfectly.
It really does. Now, did you read growing up? Did you read Fantastic Four or Namor in any regular way? I mean, Namor was hard to read regularly because he didn't have a regular book. Sometimes he did, sometimes he didn't. But did you read either one of these set, you know?
I had a lot of the early reprints of the Fantastic Four. What was it, like World's Greatest
Marvel's
Comic?
Greatest Comics, yep.
So I had a bunch of those, and obviously Namor is prevalent in a lot of those stories. I read The Invaders. I got a bunch of
Oh man,
back
love that
issues when I
book.
was a kid, and he's in that, and that's just a crazy, I mean, it's just a lot of fun. But as far as Fantastic Four, I didn't really start reading it until John Byrne started on. I had some of the older issues that George Perez, that I just, like, when I was a kid, just grabbed from, like, at the time, God, I was getting them for like 25 cents, 50 cents, in like the back bins and stuff like that. So I sporadically I read it, but I certainly have a lot of stories with Namor. I was familiar with him. I kind of knew his deal and everything.
I have that issue of Rampaging Hulk where him and Hulk beat the living crap out of each other, and it's because it's a magazine, it's like 40 pages of just the two of them just pasting each other left and right. And I have to say, even when I was a younger reader, I remember Marvel started up Tales to Astonish again as a reprint title, and they reprinted Submariner stories, and I maybe not as a kid, but like when I was maybe a teenager and I started getting some greater sense of like the industry. I remembered seeing that book and being like, Namor, was that popular that like he could front a reprint title? Like, really? And then, of course, I didn't learn until actually that episode of Mountain Comics with Danny Fingeroth, where we talked about Marvel's Greatest Comics, like you just mentioned, where Danny finally revealed why Marvel did so many reprint titles. It was to fulfill advertising contracts. That's why they pumped out reprint title after reprint title, was they had no intention, no thought that those books were going to sell. It was just to be able to say to their advertisers, you appeared in X number of comics this month.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, wow, I didn't know that. I always wondered, why did Marvel have so many reprint titles in the
But it
late
was a great,
70s?
yeah, but it, at the time, it was such a great way for people to experience those early stories, because you weren't going to get it. People weren't putting them together in trades for the most part or anything like that back then. So this is how you could see them.
Yeah, it's right. And they were very serviceable. I said I read Marvel superheroes regularly, and that way I got two Hulk books a month. But I mean, there was an FF reprint title. That was Marvel's Greatest Comics, and there was an X-Men reprint title, and there was a Hulk and a Spider-Man, of course. And I remember thinking, well, those are their marquee characters. But I was like, Namor? Really? And then I realized, oh, they didn't even really care if the book sold. It was just so they could get the another one of those OJ ads in there where he's pitching sneakers or whatever he was
OJ,
doing.
or yes, with the boots, OJ
The
Dingo,
boots, the
is that the
OJ
name? The Dingo
boots.
boots. Yeah, I remember that.
Exactly. So,
That didn't age well, but
no, it did not.
whatever.
Any of those OJ ads not age super well. So yeah, it's a great first story. It's
It's awesome.
brilliantly told, as you mentioned. It's just a great kind of in close fight with these guys. There's kind of a nice little surprise ending where we find out who the woman is that's been writing these stories. And then there's this interstitial page in each of these stories will have this where instead of, again, they never run the covers. I never understand why Treasury editors, both DC and Marvel, have such a jihad against running covers. But instead they run and they have to run them sideways because they don't fit proportionally, which is a little awkward. These kinds of like advertising art of our character, like these are the kind of things you would have seen on like the Slurpee cups. It is like the thing with his logo and Namor with his logo, and they're just kind of like little mini posters, and you're like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, they're kind of the traditional poses, I guess, or like you said, the ones they use in a lot of marketing and things like that. So is that Submariner one, is that from like an issue? Because it
That's
has
from the
like a
first
background.
issue of his book.
Is that the first issue?
Yeah. The Thing one, I think it was just created at the time. I mean, I know that like they actually had, not to get off topic here, but like when DC and Marvel were sort of ramping up their merchandising in the 70s, Marvel dedicated a couple of people on staff. I think it was Dave Cockrum, and I think even his wife Patty, to like commission portraits of all their main characters with their logos and come up with these camera ready pieces that they could send out. And DC was just like, I don't know, reprint a panel, whatever you got to do, you know. Marvel was like, no, we need to have classic iconic shots of all of our heroes and villains. They knew how to do this stuff. DC was
I know. There's so many times where you just sort of shake your head at DC and it's just like, you have all this and you keep fumbling at the 1 yard line. It just drives you insane.
So, the next story is In Combat with Captain America. Really, it says it right there in the title. Daredevil number 43 by Stan Lee, Gene Colan, and Vince Coletta. Assigning Vince Coletta to Gene Colan is not great. So it opens up with Daredevil doing some training. There's a flashback where he treats Karen Page really, really, really poorly, and we'll find out why he's kind of being such a jerk here. And then him and Captain America meet up, and of course, as the title suggests, it becomes a giant battle. And so much like I asked you about FFN and Namor, did you read Captain America or Daredevil growing up?
Captain America, I always liked. I mean, I always kind of viewed him as sort of the Superman of Marvel, you know, kind of that sort of shining icon that they had. So I liked him. I read him more in Avengers. I was a big Avengers guy. So, and you know, Cap was always prevalent in that. So I read him in that. I didn't read a ton of his regular series, kind of sporadically here and there. And Daredevil, I really haven't read much Daredevil, certainly not early stuff at all. I mean, I think he's an interesting character. I just always found, and I didn't read a lot of early stuff, so I'm not sure if it was the case then, but man, it just seemed like once it got into the 80s, it was just every time a new writer came on, they were just like, how can we torture this dude? You know, and it just got more and more grim. So I didn't really read it. You know, it was just like, hey, let's, you know, expose his identity. Let's put him in jail. You know, let's kill his girlfriend. You know, just
Karen Page gets hooked on heroin.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, if Karen's upset about this, wait till Frank Miller gets a hold of her. but he's a cool character. I think he's a really interesting character.
One of the things about Gene Colan for his fight scenes is his characters have this incredibly sort of graceful, balletic movement through the panels, and they always kind of look like they're flying. They're not. They're jumping, they're leaping, they're this or that. But the way that he's constantly moving the camera around, they really do. Like, there's one page, it's 39 of the Treasury. It's a four panel page where Daredevil just straight up looks like he's flying into the air. He's doing a Superman pose. Now, he's not, but Colan's characters always seem slightly unmoored from gravity, which I get, you know, gives it that sort of distinctive look. And one of the things that's kind of nice is that these panels are big. Like, he really told the story in sort of very basic panel layouts. And so as a Treasury, they're of course even bigger. And so it almost has like, and this is not a knock, it's almost like a slightly coloring book kind of feel to it because it's so basic. These panels are so like two figures moving in the frame and that sort of with very little background. So it's very, very sort of primal.
Yeah. Yeah. Gene Colan's is a very interesting artist. I like him. I think he's a good storyteller. You're right. He has sort of this almost flow to his movements. I always thought that he actually worked better outside of the, it was kind of Buscema was such a, you know, like to do outside the superhero genre, but he was so good in it. Colan was good in it, but even better with that. Like I had some of the, run he did on Dracula. Which was great, and that was just right up his alley because he has sort of this ethereal kind of mystical, mysterious feel to his artwork, the heavy shadows and everything. I thought he worked really well in this. This is great storytelling here. I mean, he does even with Vince Coletta, you know, he does a great job. The panel of him of Daredevil flying, like, it feels like he's flying, like swinging like high above Madison Square Garden, almost, almost gives me vertigo. It's like terrifying. Like, what are you doing that high?
You mentioned Vince Coletta, and I didn't mean to, I don't know, I didn't bring him up just to knock him. I will say, I would argue that Vince Coletta is a particularly bad anchor for Gene Colan, because Gene Colan's, as you mentioned, his stuff is so fluid and so kind of purposely imprecise that you need an anchor like he had Tom Palmer on Dracula for like 60 of the 70 issues of that book. You needed someone that could kind of go with that, and Coletta was not that anchor. Coletta was like, erase all the pencils and just ink the one line. And so you would feel that that would be disastrous. But actually, I actually thought this looks pretty good. He didn't, I didn't notice a lot of that here.
I was going to say, I'll give Coletta credit on this one. I didn't, a lot of times you kind of notice, oh yeah, this is definitely inked by Vince Coletta. I didn't notice it on this one, which is about the best I can do for him. Is it wasn't noticeable, it wasn't distracting, it wasn't annoying, but yeah, I mean, it's a good story. I mean, Daredevil's very emo, he's kind of swinging around, and it's almost like Footloose, where he's like, well, I just got to get out of here, and instead of dance, I'm gonna go swing around and jump over cars and things like that. So I mean, the way he gets, I guess he basically inhales some radioactive fumes is
Yeah,
the
which turns him into a giant jerk, which is why he's nasty to Karen Page earlier.
I love that he swings in, and there was some guy that was all excited to mix it up with Captain America, and he just crushes the guy. He just knocks him through the ropes, and this guy's day is ruined. But I thought that was pretty funny.
The page I just mentioned, page 39, I mentioned in the first panel where he's sort of flying, the bottom right panel where he turns around and he's like, I'll straighten him up and let him, and he makes like a frontal assault of Captain America, and then Captain America says, what's with you, mister? You're out of the bush leagues now. And he punches Daredevil in the head. And if you go by just sort of the way the panel's constructed, because we know that Captain America has super strength and Daredevil really doesn't. He's not invulnerable. So basically the result of this would be Daredevil's head would be split open like a David Cronenberg movie.
He basically exploded Daredevil's head in that panel.
And it said Daredevil, it's the next panel, Daredevil just like brr,
Although, it's not really fair that Cap's using his shield. I thought this was going to be like a sort of a wrestling or boxing bout, and he's coming in there with a shield, just knocking the shit out of people. So,
There is a
but
cameo from Peter Parker, we should mention there. He's taking photos. This story also has a panel of our heroes falling through a building, through the floors,
yeah,
into
that's
another thing.
true.
So that's a thing that goes on in these
True.
stories.
Yeah, this is a down and dirty fight. I mean, this is, the dialogue, kind of insists that the Cap's not really into this. And he's just like, hey, what's wrong with you? He keeps asking what's wrong with him and everything. But man, it's a brawl. It's a good fight.
It really is. And I do love the last panel where, as you mentioned, Daredevil is very emo because he says, for just a few moments in the heat of battle, I was able to forget Karen, but what happens now? Oh,
And he really
the
should have, he really should have stuck around to apologize or like
pain.
say something. You know what I mean? He just kind of left. He's like, all right,
I'm going to go
it's
pick up
not
some
good for
Cure
his Q
albums.
rating.
Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. It's so fun. Again, the Marvel, one of the appeals of Marvel, look, I was always more of a DC kid. I love Marvel comics, but I will admit, I was always more of a DC kid. That said, even as a kid, I appreciated the fact that Marvel was, I think Marvel was kind of more honest with its readers in that it was sort of like, look, you just want to see Captain America and Daredevil beat the crap out of each other. We got to come up with some story reason because there are heroes and that we can't have them, one of them do a heel turn. But it really is almost just like, look, this is what you want, and we're giving it to you. So give us your 12 cents and we'll give you this. DC was so much on like, oh no, we have to come up with a reason. Nah, you know what? He sniffs some fumes. There we go. Here, now they're gonna fight for 20 pages, all right?
Say no to drugs, kids.
Yeah. So it's like, and so we get another of these little featurette pages of, not featurette, little poster pages, Captain America, which is a reprint of a Steranko cover, and
Yeah,
this
that's a great cover.
Daredevil image, I don't know what's going on with this Daredevil image of there's like a guy in a sewer. I don't know what that's even from. It's like
you putting the lotion in the basket.
Yeah, like, what the hell? Is that supposed to be an iconic Daredevil shot? Is Daredevil keep like what? Yeah,
like who's that supposed to be? Do we have any idea? Like, is he coming up to get Daredevil? Did Daredevil just kick him in there?
Yeah, I have no idea who that's supposed to be. Anyone sees it? Yeah, anyone, if you're listening and you know who that might be, let us know in the comments because I don't know what. Yeah, it really is just. What the heck? Yeah,
that's really sad. It almost looks like Commandy, but obviously it's the wrong company.
wrong company. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It does look a little like an older version of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so the third story is here we go, right over the plate. The Mighty Thor battles the Incredible Hulk. That's our story title. That's it. Okay. Journey into Mystery number 112 by Lee Kirby and Chick Stone. It opens with a bunch of kids, some of whom are Thor fans and some of whom are Hulk fans, and they are carrying around giant cutouts of Thor and Hulk heads, which kind of look like popsicles. I think when you kind of glance at it. Yeah. And I will say, Leona, what's your opinion on Jack Kirby? I mean, it's Jack Kirby, but I mean, are you like, as a kid, because I will admit, I didn't like Kirby that much as a kid.
No, I don't think when you're younger, you don't appreciate him, you know. I guess if you were a kid when he was just coming on the scene, then you're like, wow, I've never seen anything like this. But, you know, I mean, I started reading comics, I don't know, and probably, I guess, when I was a little kid in like the late 70s, you know, and then into the early 80s. So you'd see this guy. No, you didn't think he was that interesting. You had to kind of learn to appreciate him and understand him. And then you grew up. You know, a real affinity for him, like most people. I love his stuff now.
Yep.
I mean, I really, this is kind of early, or at least the original comic that they're kind of alluding to was like Avengers 3.
Yeah, it's pretty early on in the Avengers.
I don't know how
run.
Much later this is. You can see there's still a lot of rough edges, but no, I'm a big fan. I like that these kids, you know, took the time to really make these big faces and everything exactly the same size and everything. So appreciate that. I don't know if they got together to do that first, so they knew what they had or what. But
they proportioned them out right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I love that all kids in Marvel Comics talk like Bowery Boys, even though this is the 60s. Yeah. They're like, Soldier, old man. Like, it's all that kind of stuff. Stan Lee, just fantastic. Something that I hadn't really appreciated before. Maybe I hadn't seen it. I know I've read this story before at some point, but this, as I mentioned, this is inked by Chick Stone. Mm-hmm. Man, do I love Chick Stone's inking on Kirby here. Yeah. Oh my God. He brings this wonderfully thick ink line to the figures. And they look, again, this is not a nut. It's actually a compliment. They look a little like color forms. You know, like they're so thick on the page that you're going to see them be designed to be lifted up off that little vinyl sheet and slapped down.
Yeah. And bigger than life. And
there's a section where Hulk is fighting the Avengers and he's like in close contact with Iron Man. Like they're right in the foreground. Then there's this other page 53 of the book where it's only two panels. It's the Hulk kind of rearing back, and then the big panels that he leaps on Thor. And this is when they were still, as you were kind of talking about, it's early on in the Marvel Universe, a little bit early on. I mean, this is Journey into Mystery 112. Thor first appeared in number 83. So you're talking, that's like 30 issues. But the Hulk looks more like a bruiser. Yeah. Like he's got hair on his chest. Like he looks more like a big guy rather than the sort of monster he would grow to become. And man, like I said, Chick Stone, I don't know how long Chick Stone ran on Kirby. I don't know whether he was the regular anchor on this book, but I look at this. I'm like, this is so like primal. Like they're just these incredibly basic figures. And I was such a pleasure to read this story because it's just, these two guys just beating the paste out of each other. It's so fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And that picture you're alluding to on 53 of the Treasury where the Hulk is about to pounce on him. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, because this is, you know, chest hair and arm hair Hulk. This is early Hulk, where he's like, he's an asshole. I mean, he's not, he's, this isn't like like, oh, you know, just leave Hulk be, you know, type stuff. You know, again, sort of emo Hulk, you know, sad Hulk, which is my favorite Hulk. But this is like Hulk, like he's, you know, you don't want to be around this guy. He'll kill you, you know? I mean, I think he literally doesn't want to just beat up Thor. I think he wants to kill him.
It ends with the Hulk saying, "Someday we'll meet again, and Thor will be smashed forever."
Yeah.
Jeez. Okay.
Yeah. This guy's not interested in helping anybody. He just wants to hurt people. So he's, yeah,
Right.
it's,
Yeah. It doesn't end with him sitting on an island like, "Finally, humans leave Hulk alone."
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's real. I said, I mean, I was like, "Man, Chick Stone, good anchor for Jack Kirby." And so the little featurettes. Featuring one is Thor looks like he's jumping out of flames, which I'm a little confused about. I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
You know, I don't. I'm actually not even familiar with that pose. And then the Hulk, I know that Hulk running pose only from the Hulk Halloween costume that they sold on the like superhero store pages in between the comic, and that was the image on the chest of your Hulk costume. Was that Hulk running?
which is, come on, like, you go on a Halloween, even when I'm a kid, I'm like, the Hulk's not going to walk around with a shirt that has the Hulk on it. You know, everybody knows that. Even then, I was like, that's stupid. But
Did
the
you go
one.
as any superheroes for Halloween when you were
Oh,
a kid?
sure. Yeah. Growing up, one year my mom made me a Batman costume. And
Sweet.
the one thing that was, it was really, she did a really nice job. The only problem was the ears kept flopping down. You know, the ears wouldn't stay up. But yeah, I'm sure I know I won a Spider-Man one year. I think I did Superman one year. Yeah, I did a bunch of the heroes. I did have one thing about Kirby's early art here is I never liked the way he did Thor's hammer early because it was like too small. It looked kind of, it was just sort of small. It didn't have that heft to it. You know, it didn't look like that huge like mallet. You know, it didn't look like it would have that much power to it or half that. And he was a little inconsistent with the way he'd draw it too. But I always liked later on when it was big, solid, you know, big solid mallet of a hammer. I thought that, no, this is supposed to, you know, he's calling down thunder with this thing. This can't be, you know, something you hang up a picture with. So.
It is they did manage to, when they got to finally do movies, I think they really did manage to sort of use Mjolnir to its full effect. Like they
Yes,
really
they
gave
did.
it, ironically enough, because it's a digital effect. I mean, sometimes it's a prop, but I mean, obviously when he's twirling it and throwing it, it's a digital effect. But it actually, I think in most of the, especially Thor Ragnarok or an Endgame, like it has heft to it, and it feels, and then of course that gig, there's that great gag in Ultron where they're all trying to lift it and Captain America is able to budge it just a
Shift
little
it a
bit.
little
That's a great gag.
bit.
Oh man, that stuff is, that's
And
fantastic.
I do love, oh, I mean, Kirby's, you know, going back to Kirby a little bit, the way he draws, like, as you know, the scenes in Asgard where Odin's kind of hanging out drinking with his buddies and stuff like that, watching the fight. It's just great. I mean, none of that architecture makes any sense at all, but it's just fantastic. He's got that ridiculous helmet on and everything, but it's just great. It doesn't matter. It's just so, you know, out of this world. It's just so cool.
It's all
Great.
hugeness, just all
Yes.
hugeness, you know,
Exactly. That's
and
all that
what,
matters. It's
yeah.
just, yeah. Yeah.
So, and then the final story, and speaking of emo, is the Surfer and the Spider from Silver Surfer number 14 by Lee Buscema and Atkins. So the team is back, and as any self-respecting Silver Surfer story does, it opens with three or four pages of him just bemoaning his fate. Right? That's every story is, I am so alone. The people of this planet have no understanding. They are down there. They don't know the loneliness that is the Silver Surfer.
I know you should just be up there listening to The Cure or something.
I don't like
It's so,
Mondays, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, I mean, every emo thing I said about Daredevil, just multiply it by 1,000 and you have the Silver Surfer. He's just always whining. But I mean, I get it. He can't go home, you know, he has to fly around. Is this, he's sort of, Does he have to stay on around Earth? Is that the deal with him at this
I
point?
don't remember.
Wasn't
I
that
do
kind
not
of his
remember what the
punishment after, he
Defying
betrayed Galactus
Galactus.
or
I
something?
think
I don't
so.
know.
I thought that's what it was. And
Yeah.
Galactus is like, I'm not, I won't eat Earth. Yeah, but
Right.
your punishment is or so you have to I don't exactly remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's always just sort of hanging around. And so yeah, it is 4 or 5 pages of him moping. Now, of course, here we're having him fight the least. Well, he's not I want to say Spider-Man's not mopey. He is mopey because he's always, worried about Aunt May. But
Yeah.
personality-wise, it's the contrast, at least, where you've
Right.
got the
Yes.
quippy Spider-Man versus Silver Surfer who's speaking in these soliloquies. Now, one of the things I noticed that, kind of contrary to what we were talking about with Buscema on the early story, I don't know if he really has a handle on Spider-Man. It seems like a little loose here and there. I almost wonder if
Yeah.
Buscema was like, this costume's a pain in the ass to draw. I don't want to do it.
Yeah, he's a little bulky, and he's sort of like he's not sure how to make him, like do this swinging and everything. Yeah, his Spider-Man is a little off model, I'd
Yeah.
say. But this one, as kind of contrasting this with the thing in Submariner one, is this one's like this battle's a lot more open, like because a lot of it's sort of high above buildings and swinging around and and the surfers flying and things like that. So these have a lot more like sort of full body images and not as much background detail. So there's a lot more space. It gives it a lot more space. It's just kind of interesting contrasting that fight to the one with the thing in Namor.
Yeah, the army gets involved in this one,
Yeah.
and then there's a kid in the neighborhood who jumps
Yeah.
onto the Silver Surfer's board, and later on, Surfer's like, "To me, my board," and the board takes off, and the kid is on there. There's a great panel on page 79, and it's the top panel, and it's just the army firing into the thing, and there's a sound effect,
I had the same
boom.
note.
Oh my God, it looks so great! Like, oh, just it looks like. Did they ever let Buscema just do war comics? Because
Yeah,
holy shit, this looks fantastic.
it's awesome. It looks like something Lichtenstein would steal.
Then make $30
Yeah,
off
make
of.
30
Yeah.
million and give
Yeah.
Buscema nothing. Yeah. And not
Yeah.
even credit him. I hate Roy Lichtenstein.
I hear
Anyway.
you.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the this kid gets involved, and then of course Silver Surfer rescues him, and then there's this the kid's dad who is sort of unappreciative of him.
Yeah.
Henry, oh God, cease firing, and the battle ends with everybody just sort of wandering off, and
They just leave him there.
poor Silver Surfer is there on his knees just sobbing.
That's when I'm like, well, hey, isn't anybody gonna say like help him up or say, hey, you all right? You need a soda? Anything. I mean, they just leave him there.
The Roadrunner's back to base, and it's just as well. There's not a man here who would ever take arm against the Surfer again. And then he says, "Now, when I am weak and spent, they turn to leave. No longer do they seek to slay me. Perhaps there is still hope for them. Perhaps one day they will renounce all use of force, for only then, at last, will mankind come of age."
Yeah.
It's a lot to
Spoiler
think about,
alert, they
Brett.
won't. Yeah, they
Yeah,
won't.
yeah. Spoiler alert. No, we did not do any of
No,
that. No.
we're not gonna do any of that, buddy.
Gonna be very disappointed, Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
The live action version is gonna be very disappointed to learn that none of that
Yes.
happens. And so then the little poster images, we have the cover to Silver Surfer number one, and then that classic Romita shot of Spider-Man with his hand
Yeah.
out, which to me never made a lot of sense as a Spider-Man pose, where he's kind of doing a keep it on trucking thing. But that nevertheless, that became like one of the iconic images of Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's kind of got his hand out like sort of down like
Yeah.
yeah, it doesn't really make much sense. No.
No, he's not a runner. He's like
No.
a he's swinging,
Yeah.
whatever, but okay, that's fine. So then on the inside covers we get the cover gallery and we see the four covers again. I don't know why we're always relegated to these covers being tiny and in black and white.
Yeah.
I don't get that. I don't know why they do that.
Yeah. And you
But
can't even
that's
see the whole thing.
no.
Like the two in the back, you can't even see them all. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what that's about. And then the back cover, we get a little, not a triptych, I guess a quad titch. Is that a word? Mm-hmm. Did I just I make up know. That word?
Sure.
Spider-Man in the center image, because of course it's Spider-Man. And then we get these little inset panels of our heroes fighting once again. It's drawn by John mm-hmm. Romita. So as we said at the top of the show, if you had a couple bucks in your pocket, there's no way you're turning this down if you saw this on sale.
Oh yeah, no, you're absolutely buying this. Yeah, this is great. I mean, just they knew how to sell this one.
Yeah,
they knew how to sell this one.
Did you have a favorite story from the four?
Yeah, I'd probably say that the thing Namor one was probably my favorite. I thought that kind of had the most going on. I liked the fight. I liked the storytelling. I liked the, you know, I liked some of the aspects of the fight. Like you said, kind of going through the floor of a couple stories there. I thought that was probably my favorite. The one I probably liked the least was the last one, the Surfer Spider-Man one, just because I thought, like you said, you weren't sure if he had a real handle on how to do Spider-Man at that time. But on top of that, his personality seemed off in that one too. It didn't seem like something the way Spider-Man would act in a situation like that. Just he was so instantly kind of agitated and. And aggressive towards the Surfer for almost no reason, you know. I mean, just because he caught his board when he was basically two of these fights in the story started because they bumped into each other, you know. But I just thought that kind of threw me off. But I mean, they were all a lot of fun though. I liked them all. How about you?
Yeah, I think the first one, it's contrast to what I was saying, that it's great that they just give you what you want. There's mm-hmm. something about the setup of the Thing Mariner one, which is great. I mean, of course, it's always fun, as we talked about on Mountain Comics. It's Namor's just a fun character mm-hmm. because he's ostensibly a hero, but he's got a hair trigger, right? Which is, you know, it's kind of like Jag in that regard. And it's just like, he just for moments, and he's always so imperious, and he's just always telling all the humans, all the earth, the surface dwellers, you know, basically go F themselves.
Yeah.
He's just a great, fun character. Now, mm-hmm. did you see the Black Panther sequel?
I did.
I have not seen it yet. What was your take on their version of Namor in that movie?
The problem I had a couple. I mean, I guess it just kind of goes to the greater issues I had with that movie. So I mean, one, it was very, just the filming itself was very dark, and I don't mean that mood. I mean that in actual, like, it was dark, like it was hard to see. Especially like when they first show Namor, it's this scene where they're, I think it's the first time they see him, where he sort of emerges from the water and confronts the queen and the new Black Panther, Shuri, and you can barely see what's going on. It's just really dark. So I thought the actor himself was fine. He didn't bring quite the bombast. He wasn't as he wasn't as boisterous and everything. He was strong, but he wasn't. He wasn't the same, exactly the same personality.
Okay, that's what I was curious about, because they write
like
him as like
his people.
Okay,
and just kind of, like he had their. I think he wanted their interests first. In whether that meant destroying the surface, he didn't care so much. But he didn't. He wasn't as preachy. He wasn't talking as much. So.
Okay, all right. Because that I would have killed to see that. Namor, the Namor, the Namor that walks into a clothing store and hands a bunch of pearls, and then walks out. Yeah, that Namor.
So. Yeah, but the thing is, it wouldn't have worked in that movie anyway. The movie was kind of sad. I mean, the whole thing was kind of sad, and that sort of leads to the whole thing with, obviously, with
Chadwick Boseman being gone.
Yeah, Chadwick Boseman, who I was a huge fan of. I really, really liked the first Black Panther movie. But I thought at that point, it's just like MCU. Sometimes I think you just got to realize you got to recast sometimes. Mm-hmm. You can't be so beholden to one actor that you just get rid of all these big name characters in your library. But anyway, it was it, yeah. So I'm going off on a tangent here,
No. I said
but
I always loved Namor's one note, but he's sort of gloriously one note, and that's what I like about it, you know? And so I just did never got around to seeing the movie, and I just still haven't gotten around to watching it, even though it's available. But I just was curious, like, how'd they do it? How did because I would love to hear a live act. It's kind of funny. Ironically, you could sort of it's like it's a little Jason Momoa-ish. Right, Namor, not that Momoa was more like bro, but that kind of
He wouldn't have
swagger,
to
though,
be.
you
I mean, he
know.
wouldn't have to be. He could play it more along those lines. I think you're right. I think he would actually make a good Namor.
Yeah,
You know.
you know, puny surface dwellers, out of my way, you know, all
Yeah,
that kind of
and just
stuff.
swat
So,
people out of his way and everything
yeah,
like that, and just be dismissive. Yeah, no, I think that's actually a good call. I think he may have gone with the wrong water guy.
Maybe
So,
so. Yeah, I don't
I
know.
don't
So,
know.
but yeah, so yeah, that one, the first story is my favorite. It's beautifully drawn. And again, the setup is great and you love the thing and stuff like that. But overall, it's a fun collection. It's why they didn't call it Great Superhero Battles. I don't know. I don't think battles would have sold any less than team ups, but I don't know. I wasn't Marvel editors in 1975. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention this book went until December 1st, 1975. So if you were, you know, hoping to get a Christmas present from your parents, maybe this was the in the under your tree for a lot of kids in 1975.
I got rolled up and stuffed in the stocking, you know.
You're bending the spines, mom and dad.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a terrific book, and I will say when Brett and I decided to do this, what I do is I do you read comics digitally or do you still
I
read them
do.
all print?
No, I read most digitally. I still collect certain titles like on a monthly basis, but for the most part I read through I have Marvel Unlimited and then I have the DC Infinite too.
Okay. I have a real tough time reading anything digitally. My eyes just kind of glaze over. So I like to read print editions of things when I can. And so my prep for this show is when I pick the book, I pull it off my shelf because I have every DC Marvel treasury and I read it, you know, full on. That way I'm getting the sensation of reading the treasury edition and again, and then do the notes. And I'm going through this and I couldn't find this book. And I'm like, and I keep them in order. And I'm like, what the hell? Now, of course, we recently moved from New Jersey to Florida, and some of the books got spread across a couple boxes. Because, by the way, in case you ever move all your treasuries, everybody, they're very heavy. So you want to split them up across a couple of boxes, even though we hired a moving company. And I thought, oh, well, maybe they just got put out of order. So I went through every treasury, and it wasn't there. And then I remembered. Many years ago, I gave some of my treasuries to a kid as a birthday present because I knew he was big into Marvel superheroes. And this was one of the ones I gave him was Giant Superhero Team Up. So I actually did not have a copy and I had to go back on eBay and find a copy for myself. Now, I'm always asking people about where they get them and they get them at a good price. Have you ever, when does your store ever have stuff like this or do they not carry? Oh, they do. Okay.
No, they do. They actually have a wall of like when you first walk in, they have most of the treasuries just sort of right there.
Oh, that's awesome.
In fact, they have they have that new Batman Ra's al Ghul one because it's easy to get where I live. But yeah, they have a
Was
bunch of. I
mean,
actually
Brett. That
bought
was really
one. I
mean.
bought one, the one like super villain origins one. And it was a really beat up copy of it. It cost me like $9 because it was pretty beat up. But I just thought it'd be cool. Plus, it had the backing and it was bagged and backed. And I was like, I can never find ones that are the right size for that. So I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, they're pretty good about that. They
That's
sell
good.
all sorts of stuff, yeah.
I love seeing them in stores. And so, yeah, but anyway, I was able to find this on eBay in a really good shape for $20, which is
Oh, that's nice.
surprising because I thought this would be more than that. So now it is back in my collection and I'm holding it now as we're sitting here. So I'm glad that we got around to doing this one because I don't think I would have noticed that it was gone until I had to pull it off the shelf and go, wait a minute, what did I do with this? And then I remembered, Oh, yes, I gave that away to some small child, and boy,
so
do I regret that.
You were able to settle down in your reading in your library with your smoking jacket
Yeah,
off
and my Yoo-hoo.
and a carafe of Yoo-hoo.
My carafe, my chilled carafe of Yoo-hoo. Absolutely, yeah. Yes. And thoroughly enjoyed watching these eight superheroes just beat the living shit out of each other for 80 pages. So.
They are all draws, too. I wanted some winners in this thing. So.
That's true. That's right. Yeah, there really isn't there isn't anybody left unconscious, right? They're all just
nobody,
like, okay.
Nobody's like walking away with the other guy out or something. You know, some melodrama like I won the fight. Why do I feel like I lost? You know, that type of thing that happened a lot. But
I think that was one of the things, not to get off topic as we're wrapping up here, but that was the things I did enjoy about the DC Marvel miniseries of the 90s is that they actually let one hero beat another, which I was shocked at.
Yes, I was too that they'd allow that. But I think, well, the only one, I think Batman and Captain America was a draw.
That's the one. Right.
I think maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe Cap was knocked out.
I think there's a moment where Batman is like, I can sense this guy will never give up or something.
Yeah. You're right. You know what? You might be right. Maybe Batman won that one or something.
But I mean, it makes sense. Cause it's like, look, if Captain America is visiting Daredevil's book, Daredevil can't lose because it's Daredevil's book.
Right.
But you're also not going to let Captain America be defeated by Daredevil because he's Captain America. You can't let that happen. Yeah. So it's a great collection. It's their DC, you know, Marvel was breaking from there. To this point, they had been doing just character centric treasuries. You know, it had been Spider-Man, Thor, Hulk, Doctor Strange. And here they're finally like, okay, we can break it up a little and do a collection. And it's just a really solid collection of stories. It's what you want out of a treasury. The art all looks great. So it's a really good book. So, Brett, thank you for doing this with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh yeah. No, this is always fun. So this is the last year, right? You're done after this year.
Number 100 will be our final episode. And this is 92. So yeah, we're wrapping up.
Okay. Is this like For All Mankind? Am I supposed to say a bunch of nice things about you? Are we doing that again?
We'll be doing, you can send in tributes as you feel compelled to as the show wraps up. No, you don't have to say anything nice, Brett. I know how you feel. It's okay. So anyway, why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
I'm a graphic designer, web designer. My company is Imaginate Design. I did a website recently for a really cantankerous client. I'll be honest, he was a real pain in the ass, but you can check it out. I thought it turned out pretty well. It's
he wanted what he wanted. Okay.
He kept calling me, asking me like, how do I print out the pages? Stuff like that. Come on, grandpa. So my website is imaginatedesign.com, but no, I did Rob's website and everybody seems pretty happy with it. So you can check that out too. And you can check out all Rob's work at robkellycreative.com.
Oh, thank you for the plug. I do believe I did ask you, where's the any key at some point? I think I did say that. no joke, everybody. Brett did. I have been wanting to have a website of all my various creative endeavors, my podcasts, my illustration, my Blu-ray commentaries, my writing, kind of all in one spot. And it was never it was never anything I could build on my own due to my time and just my technical know-how. And Brett did it for me and was just absolutely fantastic. And my wife especially loves it. And she, you know, she doesn't know any of this, like doesn't know how any of this stuff works. So she was sort of seeing it as it was getting built, and she just was so impressed by it. And she loves you now, Brett. Check out Brett's work, everybody. And give the website again. I'm sorry.
It's imagine8design.com. The 8 is the number 8.
There you go. Yeah, check it out. It's great stuff. And I really owe Brett, even though I paid Brett handsomely, I would really. I just gave.
Sorry, go ahead.
I sent him some old treasuries.
I got paid in digests and treasuries. So.
There you go. He'll want this Doom Patrol one. It's fine. No, he did an absolutely terrific job. I'm very, very proud of it. So again, Brett, thank you so much for coming back. I really appreciate it. Thank you all for listening. I want you to stay tuned. I'm going to run some podcast promos. And when I come back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
In 2011, the Irredeemable Shag and Aqua Rob Kelly teamed up to create the Fire and Water podcast. In 2016, they teamed up with Ryan Daly, The Franklins, and Siskoid to form the Fire and Water Podcast Network. A network built on teaming up needs a show about team-ups.
Marvel Team-Up.
Yes.
The Brave and the Bold?
You know it.
Marvel 2-in-1.
It's clobbering time.
DC Comics presents.
Of course.
Supervillain team up?
Good idea.
Youngblood X-Force?
Technically.
FW Team Up, coming this summer, only from the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Adventures into the unknown.
Tales from the Crypt.
Skeleton Hand.
The Haunt of Fear.
Dark Shadows.
Vampirella.
The Haunted Tank.
The Heap.
Eerie.
Swamp Thing.
Weird Mysteries.
Tomb of Dracula.
Tales of the Unexpected.
Werewolf by Night.
The Demon.
Man Thing.
Monster of Frankenstein.
Brother Voodoo.
The Son of Satan.
Night Force.
The Living Mummy.
The Sandman.
Tomb of Darkness.
Evil Ernie.
Saga of the Swamp Thing.
Flinch.
Hellblazer.
30 Days of Night.
Preacher.
The Walking Dead.
What do these titles have in common? All of them. From Adventures into the Unknown, to Tales from the Crypt, to The House of Mystery, to The Tomb of Dracula, may be found in The Long Box of Darkness. I'm your host, Herman Lowe. Join me every Monday night for a journey into comic book horror as we delve into the secrets of the Long Box of Darkness.
So listen if you dare, puny mortals, to the Long Box of Darkness, available on Stitcher, iTunes, and Podbean. And check out the blog at www.longboxofdarkness.com. Good night. And pleasant screams.
And now it's time for our listener feedback, and these are the comments we got on Treasury Cast episode 91, The Rampaging Hulk, with my guest Max Romero. First up is Mev, who says, excellent stuff. I have little to add, except that I, too, have an inexplicable and frankly unjustifiable fondness for Doc Samson. Thank you, Mev. I appreciate the support. Brian Chufo says, another great episode. I had to do a quick Google search around Cyborg to see if I had encountered this guy before. My first encounter with Tharok from the Fatal Five was in an episode of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which sounds so wrong, but someone created the character of Cyberlad, which is basically half robot, half Yul Brynner, split down the middle, exactly like Tharok, with a left half robot, right half human, my right, not yours. At least Cyborg's design was flipped, but none of these three ever addressed the most important issue, how do their clothes stay on? Brian Bucky749 says, speaking of the Hulk TV show, my bro and I met Lou Ferrigno at a Comic-Con and had him sign my Death of the Incredible Hulk DVD and a reprint of the Charlton Hercules Adventures of the Man God comic issue one. I figured everyone else was going to want him to sign whole comics, so I thought I'd be different. Yeah, that's a good strategy, Bucky. I do the same thing. I try and pick the most unusual. I mean, sometimes I go right over the plate. When I met William Shatner, I got him to sign Star Trek IV. But generally, I try to pick a more obscure title because it generates like a little bit of conversation at the table more than, you know, maybe some other people get if someone is signing, you know, some of them Back to the Future is signing that for the 9 millionth time. Rob McCarthy says, also, I've read so many Abomination stories where they'd say, technically, the Abomination is stronger, but he always got his ass whooped. This time, he's stronger. On Dr. Doom, it was the late 60s. Most of Doom's nobility was still an act before the first. Doom helps the story, helps the hero story. He was allowed to be scared. Now he's basically a hero that hates Richards. I haven't read a Fantastic Four comic in so long. I have no idea. Maybe interesting to see what version will show up in the movie. Super Captain says, I believe that I have watched more episodes of the Incredible Hulk TV series than read issues of the comic book. My best friend is named Bruce, and he is still salty about how they changed Banner's name to David on the show. Still, this was a fun look back at the Jay Giant. Someday I do want to get around to checking out Roy Thomas's 2-year run in the book. When I see Klaatu, I can only think of the day the Earth stood still. And Cyborg is indeed Tharok from the Fatal Five. Someone needs to tell him that you can't give yourself a nickname. Behold the Half-Man, the once was human, the used to be being. It's as if he's almost announcing his ring entrance for WrestleMania. Yeah, Super Captain, I should have mentioned the Klaatu, obviously, is Klaatu Barada Nikto. I don't know. I think I even had it in my notes. I just skipped over it when we were doing the show. Movie Matt Soroy says, the jersey format is absolutely perfect for the Hulk, especially the Rampaging Hulk. This is big screen stuff. The Hulk is a huge character in both size and power. The character is often compared to Jekyll and Hyde, the Wolfman, and the Frankenstein monster, but he's also got some Godzilla in him. He's a creature of mass destruction. Cities literally tremble when he hits the streets. The oversized format was the perfect fit for the oversized character. A treasury edition featuring the Green Goliath tearing through New York on a Godzilla-style rampage would be a must-have. Agreed, Matt. Dr. Ann says, I have a couple of comments, and I believe them all to be true. One, I also have a fondness for Doc Samson. I was a DC guy even as a kid, and I most had a handful of Hulk comics in my collection, none of which had the Doc. But like you all, I have always liked him, and I know why. Because the Alan Weiss pick of him in the original Hot Mu is so effing good. I think I imprinted it on my brain because he looks so cool. I wonder if that is true for others out there. Probably more a nod to Mr. Weiss than the character. Two things that happened on this show. Paraphrasing, quote, anyone who hasn't been in a relationship understands why Dr. Doom is so exasperated at the woman in his life, he is shaking his fist at the heaven. I mean, even Dr. Doom is brought low. Also paraphrasing, quote, I met my lovely wife, and I love my wife, and thank goodness I did that podcast so I could meet my soulmate, unquote. Two statements seemingly in conflict, but both clearly true. I can truly, truly empathize. Thank you so much, Ange. Edo Boznar says, I'm glad the Hulk and his treasuries are getting some more love. In fact, and without going back and doing a statistical analysis, it seems to me that the Marvel treasuries have in general gotten less coverage over the years. A side note, yes, Edo, I think that's generally true, and I'm trying to rectify that here in the final year of the show. Anyway, back to Edo's comment. And I have to think you guys were a bit hard on Roy for his Faulkner reference. I see it as a plug for his presumably young readers to check out the original novel, which is pretty good. Your conversation also touched on one of my pet peeves in comics from the 80s and before. The fact that fictional countries in the Balkans, like Latveria, always resembled 19th or at best early 20th century Bavaria or Switzerland, with the people apparently speaking German as well, and often dressed like they just walked off the set of a Heidi film. Paul Kien from This Network says, great episode. I only read the Hulk regularly during the Peter David era, so most of his Silver Bronze Age Avengers are new to me. I don't have this treasury, but enjoyed hearing about the Hulk versus Doom. And I, too, think Doc Samson is cool. Not sure why. I think we've got a quorum here. Dallin Bumgarten says, I always loved the Hulk and Doc Samson. Max Romero is a true delight. And this episode was most enjoyable indeed. I think that says it all. Oh, except that I was very pleased to hear that Max is planning more Human Flycast episodes. I really enjoy that show, too. Long live Treasury Cast! Oh, Dallin, I thought you knew that the show's ending at number 100. I'm sorry to have to break that to you. He also adds, Roy's with apologies to William Faulkner is even more amusing if you realize that he should have included an apologies to Herman Melville, to which Siskoid says, I thought the same thing. Brett Young, who, of course, you just heard in this episode, and his angelic voice, says, great show, Robin Max. Marvel gives us what we all wanted. More Herb Trimpe art at Treasury size. The story with Hulk on the space chain gang is fun. The Hulk Abomination exchanging cheap shots is also great. The alien characters are silly, especially Cyborg. Yes, he's a Tharic ripoff, and I hope for Cyborg's sake he leans to the left. His self-conscious monologue is classic Marvel writing. Yes, that's right. Look at me, is what I imagine Rom saying when he steps onto the beach in Florida, beach chair and inflatable Aquaman raft in hand. It's always been fun seeing Dr. Doom. Like Max, I don't know where Ledvyria is, but dictator aside, it seems like a decent place to live. It looks like a perpetual Oktoberfest. Maybe everyone is too wasted to realize they're ruled by a supervillain. I enjoy the bizarre relationship Doom has with Valeria. She reacts to Doom's power over Ledvyria the way my wife reacts to me bragging about winning fantasy football. At least he chills out and they get a few minutes of downtime hanging out in her bed with way too many pillows before Devo interrupts with Hulk news. Ah, the classic story. Doom meets girl. Doom captures girl. Doom rules country to impress girl. Doom gets mad. Girl sabotages his plan to use weapons of mass destruction and sends girl to prison. Doom gets hugged by Hulk. Doom makes girl mixtape. Been there. Great show as always. Looking forward to the next episode. I hear your guest has the voice of an angel. Yes, like I just said, he does. And finally, Steve Givens says, I'm a pretentious English teacher who loves the work of William Faulkner, and even I rolled my eyes at Thomas's reference to Sanctuary. Really, Roy, do you really think the average 10-year-old picking up this book in 1974 is going to think you're plagiarizing the title of a fairly obscure novel published 43 years earlier? Then again, it is refreshing to see Roy Thomas take more care in giving proper attribution to work other people have done and not unfairly take credit for things he didn't create himself. Also, Cyber looks like Cyberlad from the second X-Men episode of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, second mention. I wonder if there's a connection. Anyway, great episode, Rob. So good to hear Max's take on this book. Thank you all for the comments. As always, I really enjoy reading your responses to the episode. So thank you all very much. So that's going to do it for this episode of Treasury Cast. Big thanks to my pal, Brett, voice of an angel, Young, for coming on and talking about giant superhero team-up, put team-up in quotes with me. Always fun to talk to Brett. And of course, you can find all the back episodes of the show on our website, FineWaterPodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. You can find us on Twitter at Treasury Comics. And finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to Patreon.com/FW Podcasts. And there you're going to lock various rewards, one of which will be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Jeff Pullier, Brett Young, Mark Balbus, and Chuck Dill for their support of Treasury Cast. I really appreciate it. Also, thanks to Gord Tolton and David S. Gutierrez for their support of the Fine Water Podcast Network. So that is going to do it. We will see you next month. But until then, go big or go home.
Stronger than a whale, he can swim anywhere.
He can breathe underwater and go flying through the air.
No matter, rims of the deep, will be buried in the sea.
The favor of Atlantis is the prince of the deep.